Welcome to the EDUCAUSE 2009 Annual Conference Podcast. The EDUCAUSE 2009 Annual Conference brought together the most influential IT decision makers and resources to improve the ability of higher education to achieve its mission. This podcast is sponsored by Juniper Networks and Quest Communications International. You can find more podcasts like this by searching for EDUCAUSE on iTunes or visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts.
Good morning. How's everybody doing this morning? We'll go ahead and get started now. My name is Mike Lucas. I'm the Director of Computing Operations for Texas A&M University at Qatar. So my first question is going to be, does anybody know where Qatar or Qatar is? Okay, so I'll fill some people in on that here in a few minutes. I oversee all the computing infrastructure for our campus over there. We are a part of Texas A&M University, our main campus located in College Station, Texas. This is Court Sampson. He's a senior lead IT consultant in ITS. He's with our User Services and Instructional Technology group. He came from our main campus in College Station, where he oversaw one of our open access labs of about 600 workstations, and then supervised or what's the right word? Supervised the central help desk system at our main campus as well. So he's been with us for about a year, a little over a year now. And I've been in Qatar for about 4 years. So what we're going to do, I thought we'd introduce a little bit about our university, just a brief overview so that we can add some syntax to where we're coming from. Some things that we do will be relevant, some things that we do won't be relevant to your environment. So we're kind of going to let you pick and choose some of those things. So we're going to talk about our university, then we're going to talk about our laptop program that we've had going on, some of the challenges, some of the opportunities, and then really looking ahead at where we're going to go from here. And then we'll open it up to questions. And what we've tried to do is actually have quite a bit of time for questions so that we can try and address some of the things that are relevant to your environment. So Doha, Qatar is east of Saudi Arabia, off the Arabian Peninsula. Time-wise, it's about a nine-hour time difference. Our work week over there is Sunday through Thursday. So when we're communicating back with our main campus and some of our vendors and things like that, keep that in mind for perspective. Texas A&M University at Qatar is part of Education City. Education City was created by Qatar Foundation, and that's a big initiative by Her Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Nasser al-Mizned. In the Middle East, she is one of the visionaries for higher education. What was happening was the Middle East was losing students to the West for education. So what her vision is to bring education to the Middle East. We are one of six universities within Education City, and we have four engineering programs there. Virginia Commonwealth is there, Weill Cornell, Texas A&M, Carnegie Mellon, Georgetown, and Northwestern. What we have done, or what she has done, is she's bringing programs from the West over there. So our main campus has hundreds of programs. We're only doing four engineering programs over there. So we started offering classes in the fall of 2003. Like I mentioned, we have four engineering programs: chemical engineering, petroleum engineering, mechanical engineering, and electrical engineering. To date, we have approximately 400 students representing 32 different countries. We also have exchange programs with our main campus, study abroad programs. So as part of our laptop thought process, students from our campus will actually take those laptops back to the U.S. for maybe a semester, maybe a year, and vice versa. When students from the U.S. come to our campus, they're supplied with a laptop or tablet PC as well. So back in 2003, when we started our branch campus over in the Middle East, we had 29 students, and this is going to add a little bit of perspective as well on how our laptop program has changed over the years. With our 29 students originally, we had Dell laptops. Every student got a laptop as a freshman as part of their orientation. The laptops are not given to them, they're loaned to them. 2004, we increased 85 students, and initially in 2003, the administration for our campus and part of with our main campus, they really wanted to look at tablet PCs and using the tablet PC for instructional technology. In 2003, they kind of decided that it wasn't ready for prime time, so they went with Dell laptops. In 2004, they were looking at tablet PCs and actually went with a Gateway tablet PC that had a 15-inch screen. What we did is the 29 students from 2003 that were now sophomores, we replaced their Dell laptops with tablet PCs, so all 85 students had the Gateway tablet PCs. 2005, at 140 students, the freshmen got Gateways again. In 2006, we actually learned from what we were experiencing with the Gateways and changed over. We went through a kind of an evaluation process with a couple of different manufacturers and changed over to the Toshiba M400 tablet PCs for freshmen. So at that point in time, we had Gateways and Toshiba M400s. In 2007, we stayed down the path of the Toshiba M400. That was basically just a technology refresh. In 2008, the M400 was replaced by the M700. So at that point in 2008, we had M700s, M400s, and Gateways. In 2009, this year, what we did is we actually had some discussions, and there was a committee that was created, and Court will talk more about that, that we made a decision to not give freshmen tablet PCs. Instead, the freshmen got netbooks, and we went through kind of an evaluation on our netbooks. And then the sophomores, we replaced their M700s that they received in 2008 with M750s. And one of the reasons we did that was due to, again, where we're located and making sure we had enough spares and additional equipment as we had students coming and going, study abroad, things like that. So at that point in time, this year, we have approximately 390 to 400 students. And from an IT perspective, we've got a challenge because we're supporting Lenovo S10 netbooks, Toshiba M750s, Toshiba M700s, Toshiba M400s, and believe it or not, we still have a couple of the Gateways out. So now think about the lifespan of the Gateway that is in some of our students' hands. It's 5 years, 6 years old now. So that's been a big challenge. And then, again, where we're physically located, the Gateways were purchased through our main campus. Another part of that is when we had repairs, since they were purchased directly through our main campus and the programs that our main campus offers, we actually, for repairs, didn't have a repair center located in the Middle East. We actually had to ship them back to the U.S. for repairs, which, of course, added significant delays. So when we were talking about purchasing and so forth, we didn't purchase just the number we needed. We had to purchase significantly more than the number we needed for loaners and spares and then spare parts and things like that. So these are some of the challenges that we had that probably most of you will not. Again, the logistics. We've purchased laptops, some of them directly from the Middle East through local resellers over there. However, most of our tablets and the Lenovo S10s, those have actually been purchased through our U.S.-based contacts from our main campus. So what happens is, from a purchasing standpoint, I communicate with our main campus representatives. They know where we're located. Whenever we get a purchase order generated, they actually ship to our main campus. Main campus then ships them over to us. Now, from a repair and warranty standpoint, we get repairing, and we do have some local vendors that we work with for repairs on the Toshibas and the Lenovos. Now, that's something that has kind of been relatively recent over the past 3 or 4 years. Originally, everything was shipped back to the States, and that's just because of how business is done in our region. It's significantly different, and those are some of the processes that have been changed over the past 4 years. We have begun working with more local vendors there, but there have been significant challenges for us in making sure that we have adequate spares, repairs, and then when we do have see a significant failure rate, like we did in the hinges on the gateways, that's when we changed over to another product. And we've worked with Toshiba, the M400s transitioning over to the M700s. They actually made some significant changes in the ruggedness or durability of that tablet screen when it rotates. So there are some things to think about there. And then what we were looking at as well when we changed over to the netbooks was those tablets or those laptops really aren't lasting 4 years. The students over there, they don't really have a sense of ownership. And yes, they're loaned. Let me follow that loaning of the laptop up with another piece. When they graduate, the students get to take the laptop with them. From our perspective, it's lived its life cycle. We don't want to have to keep tabs on them, keep track of them, return them back to inventory. The students do get to take those laptops with them. So.
Hi, I'm Court Sansom. I'm the team lead in charge of the help desk, as Mike mentioned, over in Tamaqiu. And I'm going to be talking a little bit more about the support implications and pedagogical implications of the laptop program. So I think this is probably going to be maybe a little more of the abstraction that you could apply going forward. Does anybody have any questions about the context that we're talking about here or the logistics before I get started?
You mentioned your workday is Sunday to Thursday. Is that because of the time difference, or that's actually the workday?
No, that's actually the workday. That is the workday for the Middle Eastern countries.
Yep. So in Central Time, where our main campus is, our workday is essentially Saturday night through Wednesday night or Wednesday afternoon. Yes, we have licenses for a number of packages that have been requested through the faculty or you know, productivity type packages. That's included in the image creation. I'm going to talk a little about the images, but we do, I mean, it does come with software on it. Now, when they leave,
When they leave, based on our licensing agreements, we have to return the machines back to their default image. So things like Office, if they want to purchase Office, they have the ability to purchase it through our main campus and our software licensing. But if they choose not to, then they don't have it. So we return it back to its default image before they graduate.
When you say the laptop cannot last 4 years, is that because technically the technology moved too fast?
It's a little of both.
Yeah, primarily it's physically.
Yeah.
Because of how they treat the laptops, it goes back to sense of ownership. What we find is that they don't have a sense of ownership, and as a freshman, to get a full-blown laptop, great, falls off the table the first time, and, you know.
They do treat them pretty harshly, as students tend to do, as students without a sense of ownership tend to do. And if you think about the life cycle of a laptop, if you bought a laptop today, as a freshman, you might be using Word or something like that, and it would go really whiz-bang. It would still be going whiz-bang your senior year, but at that point you're being asked to use AutoCAD as an engineer or something of that nature. And so the types of things they're having to do 4 years down the road are actually too much for the laptop to do, and probably would have been stressing it their freshman year. So the life cycle it's weird. You get a kind of negative return on your investment there. Do you have a question?
My question is how do you find your vendor's response in terms of giving you either discounts on your shipping and freighting based on volume purchases? Is that something that should make sense?
Correct. Part of why we purchase through our main campus is our main campus has 48,000 students. We have 400 students. So we try and leverage that buying power. Now, the flip side of that, and that's part of what I was doing here this week, was meeting with vendors. An example is Toshiba ships from Japan to the States, and then our central receiving ships it right back over to the Middle East. So talking about green and carbon footprint and all of this, we're not doing real well. We can say that once it's in our hands, you know, we do very well. But getting it to us, and those were some of the discussions I had with vendors. Can you guys ship direct
from your manufacturing facilities to us in the Middle East. Lenovo's the same way. They go from Hong Kong to the States back to us.
And my second question is your imaging. Do your vendors do the imaging in their own vehicles, or do they pass the back onto a distributed location?
No, we actually do our own images.
Do your own images.
Yeah.
And then the last question is your vendor response for innovative thinking, like to give an example, the Toughbook is a very reinforced case, mm-hmm. which would give a longer lifespan. Do you find that your vendors are responsive to innovation?
Some of the vendors are. And again, those were some of the discussions I was having this week. I was in Gitex in Dubai 2 weeks ago, had the same discussions with the Middle Eastern representatives, trying to get them to understand really our environment. You know, our environment, I saw 136 degrees Fahrenheit this last summer. You know, you leave a laptop inside of a car, it's going to melt, period. We've seen it. And then the dust environment as well. So talking about, you know, we can have a laptop that's very rugged and durable, but if dust is getting into it, you're still going to shorten that lifespan. So then, again, looking at the netbook as a possible option, going from a cost here to a cost here, okay, it's more considered a consumable item then. And how do we manage that? He's going to talk about some things, really, and some of the questions that we have in our mind right now moving forward, that really anybody that's looking at a laptop program should have a full understanding of the ramifications of these things before you say, hey, we're going to roll out a laptop program. So.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, the fee for the laptop, is that a separate fee or is that just bundled in the overall tuition?
Our students don't pay tuition.
Perfect.
Our students don't pay for school.
Based on our environment over there, the students are generally have scholarships from some of the oil and gas companies. So as long as they make a commitment to work for those companies for a year or 2 years after graduation, then all of their tuition is covered. So again, it's a different environment. And when we talk about budgeting and cost and things like that, you know, a lot of the discussions that I've been involved with over the past week, budget, you know, money, unfortunately, and believe me, I think it is a very unfortunate thing, we do have a different funding mechanism in place. Our campus is not funded from the state of Texas like our main campus is. We're actually funded through Cutter Foundation. So again, a different environment, not relevant necessarily to what you guys are doing, but again, looking, I'm still trying to look at cost and maintenance and repairs and accessories and things like that over the lifespan of the units. Do I have to from a monetary standpoint? Not necessarily today, but our budget has started to really taper off a little bit, and we do have to look at things that maybe we didn't have to look at near as much when we had 29 students. So.
Yeah, we do have some budget constraints, but they're not tied to student tuition really at all. I really don't think any of our students have to pay tuition because they're funded either through Cutter Foundation or oil and gas companies. Okay, well, I'll go ahead and get started. Please feel free, if you have any questions, just interrupt me. I don't like have a flow or anything. What I'm going to start talking about were the hidden costs that we encountered, and I would encourage anyone who's looking at implementing a laptop program to anticipate some of these because they become quite formidable. They're not, it isn't sufficient just to look at the cost of the laptop and perhaps depreciation over 4 years. It's significant in terms of support costs. One of the first things that we encounter is the security of the hardware. You definitely need to plan. You're going to lose laptops. Students are going to have them stolen. You'll need to have network monitoring in place in order to determine when one of the stolen MAC addresses shows up on your network. You also need to, you know, do training for the students. That was one of the things that we're implementing now because we didn't originally, and we found that students really have no notion of how to secure their laptop. You may have programs already in place, but we did not. And that's going to turn into a fairly significant cost in terms of support staff. The image and hardware maintenance is rather predictable. I mean, you can assume that some things are going to be broken and adapters, power adapters are going to break and, you know, plan for that. But as Mike indicated in the previous slide, our images are astronomical in the sense that I think this past summer we were testing 11 images in user services. We spent well over 600 man hours testing images for laptops. And that's a significant investment when we're talking about 4 help desk staff full time. And this summer, in fact, we were at half staff. We had 2 people. So it was a significant investment in terms of our time, especially because we were still doing support as well. That will accumulate as well, because those laptops, when you change a form factor, they get a new image. And there are investments you can make up front to manage that. And we're looking now at kind of retroactively fitting some of our images into a management software or something. In fact, I talked to a vendor here. It's great stuff. In terms of the pedagogy and the implications there in the classroom, you know, obviously a student laptop program is designed to improve the learner outcomes in the classroom. And it turns out that that's not just putting a laptop in the student's hand. We've learned that as well. There's a classroom disruption element to students when you sanction laptop use in the classroom, which you would kind of have to do to make a laptop program effective. Faculty are going to need to spend some amount of time controlling that that distraction, and it is a distracting factor. There are some tools that we use. We use Dino to implement a classroom monitoring. It's installed on all the laptops, and when they log in, they connect to the instructor's machine, and they can control what the students can access, and if they can open web browser, and if they can go to certain web pages. And they can also do some clever things like sharing PowerPoints and annotation and stuff like that. So it's a really powerful tool. It's really great, but we do have to train the faculty on it. We have to train the students on how to use it. And there's a little bit of overhead involved with getting it fired up, and if it goes wrong, we have to dispatch a support staff. So it does incorporate some classroom disruption we found. Was there a question over here?
I don't know. So I can just jump off. We have to put the cost.
Yes. I have a full slide next slide on that point exactly. Faculty buy-in is absolutely number one hidden cost and opportunity for you there. The faculty empowerment technology was the Dino that I was talking about. Again, there's an investment, a training investment as well there. And they'll need to be able, I mean, they have to volunteer, of course, to use this, and many of them find it too bothersome. So we really only have a very low adoption rate integrating the laptop program that we've had, which, as you can see, is extremely expensive, into the classroom. And that low adoption rate actually contributes to another factor that will diminish your learning outcome returns on the laptop program, and that's that your students are not native to certain classroom management technologies, but many of them, especially in our case, you know, we did a survey, and that informs some of our slides, but for many of our students, it was the first computer they've ever owned. And while their heart's in it, you know, you give them a computer, and those are the kids that love it. They take good care of it. They don't know how to use it very well. And so there is a learning overhead involved for them to bring them up to speed, even to use it in just one class. And that overhead is fairly constant. In order to make it worthwhile, you need to kind of distribute it across all of their class loads, because the time spent learning how to use Dino or how to use their computer in general is time not spent learning math or engineering or literature or whatever. Faculty development, yes. It turns out there are a lot of studies done by academics in the field on laptop programs, and in almost every case, certainly everyone that I've read, they have shown that outcomes, the learning outcomes, or students' grades, the students' performances, are not improved without a sustained and coordinated development, instructor development program. And this is true from middle school through the universities. If faculty or instructors in general are not using the technology effectively in the classroom, it's generally hampering learning. It's not helping it at all. And that's counterintuitive to those of us in the technology field. I mean, I can learn anything with a laptop if you just give me a wireless connection in a few hours. And that's fun for me. But the students, I mean, they're Facebooking, and you know, they're doing lots of things that aren't necessarily contributing to their learning environment. And faculty need to be trained. It's not necessarily intuitive on how to deliver instruction effectively through a new environment. A coordinated approach throughout the curriculum is necessary. Like I was saying, the low adoption rate is one of the worst things that we have encountered. We have a handful of faculty that use the laptop and tablet functionality passionately, but they're not. There's not really not enough of them, I think, in order to make the program worthwhile. So one of the things we're looking at going forward is how to incorporate more faculty into the fold. And then again, the low adoption doesn't leverage the learner overhead. One of the untapped potentials of a program like this for us is the student technology literacy. I don't know about you guys, but our students are really great at downloading a movie. If you need one, they'll get it for you for free in minutes. And they're great at Facebook, but they're really not good at determining what is and is not a valid email or a phishing attempt. They're not good at being safe on the web. They're not good at troubleshooting their own problems and fixing even the most minor of Word or Excel issues. They have no idea that there's a help button that you can search in. None of these things, the literacy that will help them in their professional careers is not there. And this was the case when I was on main campus as well with 48,000 students. It's easy to chalk it up as a cultural thing, but I really don't think it is. I think it's just they're not willing to pay attention to that because it isn't fun, I have to say. So one of the things that we're going to be working on immediately is a student technology literacy program that will incorporate all sorts of programs for students using their laptops, teach them how to use them effectively, teach them how to solve their own problems. They all have to take, in our environment, a succeeding in college course in their freshman year because culturally, Western education is not necessarily, in our culture, in Qatar, the culture is collaborative in nature. And that translates into what we would call cheating here. But it's culturally very acceptable for them, you know, sit down and do their homework together or their test together. So we have to train them how to learn in a Western environment. And the Succeeding in College class is going to have a student technology literacy program element to it in the coming semester. In fact, it's part of our newly adopted strategic plan. So I would highly recommend making available any sort of resources that you can, whether it's short course training, something we did on main campus and we're doing also in Qatar, to incorporating it into willing faculty, and especially in the more general courses. So I keep thinking I see hands coming up. Does anybody have any questions about this? Yes. I have several of them printed out over here. I don't have them on the slides, but yeah, I can definitely share that with you. In fact, I'm in graduate study for educational technology, and I'm doing a paper on laptop programs, so I can give you my bibliography if you like. Okay. Does anybody else have? Yes, right over here. Oh, sorry.
It's not a cultural thing, sorry.
Oh, okay.
That students don't know how to do productivity things or understand how to deal with what is a threat.
Absolutely. Everywhere. Yeah, it happened for us on main campus as well. Yeah.
With the student technology literacy, what we found belongs.
That is a great approach to it. I mean, we actually budget our support staff time to do some of those trainings, but in an environment where you couldn't, that's a great solution, I think. Yes. Little bit of both on that. I mean, the reality is the attendance is not what it probably could be. It's not ideal. I think it's valuable for the 7 kids that show up to teach them something good. We can't really make it compulsory as a support staff, department. We're not in the business of mandating these types of things. Faculty sometimes do, though. And that's interesting. That's where the faculty buy-in, again, is very important. For some of our classes that leverage especially the productivity software, rather than spending time teaching the student how to use Excel or Word or PowerPoint, they indicate that they have to attend one of the sessions. And we coordinate with them so that we offer sufficient, sessions that the students can attend. But it's really kind of a shotgun approach. However we can get them there is fine. In the past, some of the strategies that I've used on main campus for my student workers, like when I have them answering phones and stuff, they're not necessarily the highest skilled when I get them, but I pay them to go to the, I mean, I give them an hourly rate when they go to our short course training so they can improve their skill set that way. Other departments I know have employed our short courses, again, with paying them the hourly rate, even though they're an office student worker or something, they give them hours to go take these classes, you know, as they were at work. And many of them, they think they're getting out of work when they're doing that. So it actually works out really well. But again, there's just so many different approaches, none of which are particularly effective, but if you add them all up, you can get a few, you know, you can get some there. And like what we've done, and I'm really excited about it, is that it is going to be compulsory because it's going to be an element in a compulsory course that they have to take their freshman year. So we're going to be working very closely with the instructor on that. There were a couple of others. No? Okay. Anybody else? All right, well, I'm going to move on then. One of the things, and this kind of took place in parallel to my arriving at Qatar, so I'm going to be reading the slide to you, essentially. There was a need for reevaluation, I can attest to that, because apparently there had been no formal evaluation done in the past of the merits of the program. So, and the CIO formed a committee, mostly faculty members. There was, Mike was our IT representative, he was there in advisory capacity, of course, so it was kind of an academic sort of committee. Student input was collected, though, and they evaluated that feedback. I think less than half of the students, at the time we were only offering tablet PCs, less than half the students were using the tablet functionality to take handwritten notes, for instance. And we do a lot of engineering courses, so handwritten notes are, I mean, the only way you can't type out an equation very quickly in a class. So handwriting is the way to go if you're taking notes. So I don't know if the students just aren't taking notes or if they're using pen and paper. But some of the features that the students complained about / requested attention to was the battery life, screen size, and weight. These are, of course, things you'd predict, I think. The committee conclusion was that freshmen, in particular, had no use for tablets, and that's because none of the freshman instructors used any of the tablet functionality. That was what led to that conclusion. This is our first year giving the freshman netbooks, so we'll see how it turns out. I confess to being somewhat dubious about that. They also concluded there was no sense of ownership, which we talked about significantly, but they didn't really suggest a way of resolving that. I'm not sure what they would unless we charge the students, but in our environment we can't really. So we decided, as Mike mentioned, to go with netbooks the first year and to recycle those for at least maybe a 2-year life cycle so that freshmen get netbooks, turn them back in, and get a real tablet in their sophomore year, and then we give those netbooks back out to the incoming freshmen. Again, I can't report how that's going to work. I have my doubts about the lifespan of a netbook for 2 years, honestly, the way the students treat them. And I'm not really sure that they're getting much use out of the netbooks because the screen size is very small. And so for collaborative environments, we've had complaints where they are all trying to huddle around, you know, a 10-inch screen, and that they might as well use an iPhone at that point. I was going to say something here, and I forgot what it was. In any case, does anybody have any questions for me? Yeah.
Do you have any issues?
The question was, do we encounter any students who want to bring their own laptops and want to substitute? Not in my experience, we haven't. I think that would be very different stateside, but where we're at, like I said, most of the students don't even, this is the first computer they've ever had, much less laptop. And then the others, they tend not to be as engaged. They're really not there with their laptop. Yeah.
It's more of an IT-driven thing, and
it
started out that way. And that's really why we're talking about this whole evaluation thing and really looking ahead. You'll see some of the questions that come up and really, I think, give some indication on where we're going that may either change or really do away with this program.
That's what I was reminded of yesterday, that quote that Lawrence Lessig left in the presentation about there's nothing so useless as doing efficiently that. The committee was working on doing this program efficiently, I think, but I really think the fundamental question they should have been asking is whether it needs to continue, to be honest with you. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's just start in the front and go back. There's three of you in a row.
I wonder, do you also provide labs for them to be able to use, or is this their only source of computer?
We have open access facilities available to them, yes. We have a pretty small, as you saw, a student population. So we have one full-time open access lab, and then we have a training lab that doubles as open access that they can use. There are computers available for them in the library, kiosks in what we call OASIS, which is our kind of learning center, academic support center. So they have plenty of computers they could use. Oh, yeah, that's right. We have teaching labs that are high-end computers for engineering purposes. So each engineering program has labs with specific software unique to that program. Right behind him? Yeah.
My question is much more
I think they use, for certain purposes, the laptops collaboratively. But there's a lot of software we want to install on their laptop, or we advise against installing on their laptop. So in many cases, especially as they grow in the program and become juniors and seniors working on those big projects, they're having to use software that would be pointless to try to run on a tablet PC that's 3 or 4 years old, you know. I think we see a little bit of both. But you're absolutely right, especially in engineering. There is a significant portion of the work that cannot be done on the laptop, which is why I think it's worthwhile to evaluate. Yeah. Oh, actually, let me go back to the back here.
My question is really on the same line as those two. A fourth-year engineering student is not going to really be able to do what they AutoCAD on a tablet.
Exactly.
So, you know, I guess my question is, what is the purpose? What are they using it for? Are they just using it for Facebook? Are they actually taking notes on it? What do students respond evaluation as to how
they check email with it. What were the top things? They checked email,
social networking,
and web browsing. Yeah, these were the top three things that they used their laptops for. We do have a Blackboard installation, and we use we're part of the main campus license on the Blackboard installation, so we use theirs. Faculty do use it to some degree. I would not say it's significant. Mostly it's grades, but some faculty do deliver learning materials through it. And I think they could very successfully utilize it if they were accessing materials on Blackboard Vista. But they, like I said, the penetration of that technology is not very deep into our faculty at this point. There's all over the place. Yeah, right here in the red chair.
Do you ever have cases of students repeatedly abusing them, like just being really irresponsible? They lost them, they broke them more than once. Do you just replace them?
Well, what we do, if a unit is lost or broken, and broken, not covered under warranty type thing, so if they leave it in their car and it melts, then they actually have to pay for it. Yeah, we do charge them back for that cost.
So if it was integrated in their curriculum and they no longer had one, it would be their problem.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the red shirt.
Have you looked at server-based computing, like Carmen services, to kind of overcome the whole thing of running some of the higher-end applications?
We host Citrix, yes, and we deliver some of the higher-end applications that way, and they can use their laptops to access that. Whether or not they do is something of a question at this point. They report doing so, but we see a high usage in the labs they're using in the labs. So I'm really not sure exactly what they're reporting they're accessing. I think what they're doing is accessing their email through Citrix so they can use the Outlook full client. So, yeah.
You touched upon, and you peripherally mentioned a few of the reasons for it, but could you expand on the discussion to discontinue the program? We're having that discussion ourselves.
Oh, are you? Okay. Well, yes, actually, the next slide, I think we're done here. These were the questions that we're asking that are driving that discussion. And to be honest, as a support personnel, I mean, I think Mike and I are probably on the similar page for this, because he's in charge of having to run the program, and I'm in charge of having to support the program, and I'm seeing 20-25% of my support staff's time devoted to this program that really I don't think we're getting much out of. So the conversation is being driven by us. But the questions that we're asking and that we think would be useful for other programs probably to ask are pretty much listed here. First of all, and the most fundamental question, again, one easy to overlook when you get into the academic study of the worthiness of a laptop program, is do you actually need the laptops? Are you going to have sufficient buy-in and usage from the faculty in order to make that a worthwhile program? I mean, these very, very expensive programs, as we've outlined, not just in terms of money, but in staff time as well, and as well as, you know, the student involvement that's very expensive in terms of their learning. So if you're not going to leverage it sufficiently to get the overhead, you may just not need the program. When you're developing a laptop program, and if you decide to go forward, do you have a faculty development program being developed, like, you know, in parallel to this? Because they do need to land right at the same time. One of the hard lessons that I think we've learned at Texas A&M at Qatar is the fact that the faculty just didn't really have a good understanding of the best ways of using this technology, and at this point, it's really tough to get them into those classrooms and seminars that we're trying to put together for them in order to show them how to use it better. Again, another program that's useful, I think, to develop in parallel, which I wish we had done, but we're doing now, is the student literacy program. This is a really, really great corollary to introducing students to technology in the classroom, because I think as professionals, they're going to be at a disadvantage if they don't have a command of the most fundamental things, I think, on solving their own computer problems type thing. Again, the studies that I mentioned, and I'll be glad, I think our contact information is out, so I'll be glad to share this, but several of them indicated that the faculty development, the instructor development program was really necessary in order to achieve a higher learning outcome. And the ones that addressed it specifically indicated that you had to sustain that effort for 20 plus months in order to start seeing the learning outcomes that you were hoped, you know, the return on your investment. One of the things that I think we're going to continue to do is having a standing committee that meets regularly, not just in emergent type situations, to look at all the opportunities and make sure that we're fully taking advantage of you know, this program. It's so expensive, we really need to take full advantage of it. Don't necessarily assume that your students need to have access to this technology for the entire 4 years of their matriculation. It doesn't have to necessarily track with them directly, which is to say, for us, looking and turning into a sophomore, introducing this at sophomore level or maybe even a little later, is certainly viable, because we were seeing that the freshmen were not using the full features, you know, and they just didn't need them. And then, like I was telling you, our netbooks, we think we may just kind of reappropriate those as a supplemental instructional tool for the Succeeding in College course. Just to give you a little bit of background, we provide supplemental instructional tools for other classes, like calculators. We order all the students. They get a TI, some big calculator. I haven't even looked at it lately. And they get a backpack with them. So they get a lot of things. But the calculator, for instance, is considered a supplemental instructional tool. We don't maintain it. We just kind of hand it over to them. It's theirs. The instructor does with it as they please. So we're looking at perhaps doing this with the netbooks for the freshmen that are succeeding in college class I was talking about. We have another slide of questions. Oh, I thought we did. Oh, okay. All right, well, here's our contact information, and we'll open up for questions in just a second, but feel free to contact us if you have any questions, and if you want links to those studies or PDF versions of them, just send me an email. I'm the one at the bottom, courtney.sansom@qatar.tamu.edu, and I'll be glad to provide that information to you. Does anybody have any other questions or comments for us?
I have a question for the room, actually.
Great,
please. Is anybody else here coming from an art and design university? Okay. I'm curious, maybe afterwards, to speak with anyone Mac-based or coming from Ardent Design University, or not an Ardent Design University, but a university running some kind of Ardent Design program.
Sure.
Thinking about a laptop initiative or running one.
And we share a building with Northwestern, and they give out MacBook Pros. So I'm jealous. I bought one. Yeah. So, okay, I think you have several people to meet with. So,
yeah.
Were there any other questions? Yeah, in the very back. Yeah.
You mentioned that students have to come to develop this program to get their software
removed
and their
Well, that's a very good question, actually, and I skipped over that element of the support cost. It is a huge problem for us every returning semester when they have to come get their computer reimaged. It's obviously a logistical nightmare to get all of these students in a timely manner. And, you know, we've gotten now to the point where we're swapping their hard drives, which is like the first thing I wanted to do when I got there. I was like, we're not going to store these laptops for more than 5 minutes. Like, I don't want them here, you know. So it's a logistical problem. We track them, and then we're negotiating right now, because from a user services perspective, I don't really like the solution. But what we do is we block their account if they haven't gotten it done like the first week, and we send them lots of email about that. But the consequences of blocking their account are fairly severe, because they can't receive email. Not only can they not log into their email, but it bounces to their faculty member. I mean, so from a user services perspective, I have some things that I'd like to change about that process. But really, the only thing we do is wield their account over their head until they're absolutely required to get on the wireless or to log into their email. Many times they don't come. I mean, it's a small percentage, you know, maybe 5 to 10% max don't get it imaged. But it's a really heavy investment for us in terms of staff time.
To follow up on that, when they're graduating, they can't graduate until that laptop has been reimaged.
Yeah.
So,
and that's because of our licensing agreements. That's pretty heavy right there. There was another question right here. Yeah.
You mentioned using Synfix. You also mentioned having 11 different images. Are you not able to Zenapp to kind of have one image to manage all of that?
Our Citrix environment has been up for about 3 years now, and we are actually redesigning and re-implementing a totally new Zenapp environment. So that's actually what we're in the process of doing right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too early for quantifiable data. What's your feeling on the lifespan of the Netflix, especially in the meat grinder environment you described?
I'm thinking, I think 2 years is a stretch. That's what I told Mike.
Well, in the discussions that we've been having over the past several weeks, realistically, looking at what we're trying to accomplish and what we're not accomplishing, not having any type of program for freshmen, and then really looking very hard at sophomore, junior, seniors, and looking at other things like the how can we provide those applications remotely, et cetera, where they don't have to have a laptop, but that also falls back in with our faculty development, student literacy, and things like that. Now, I've spoken to several of our students, and they don't want to carry a netbook. They don't want to carry a laptop around. They will bring it up to campus if they know that they're going to be using it outside of their class time. Most of them, they're going to have their iPhone. I'm going to check my email on my iPhone. I don't have to worry about booting it up. I don't have to worry about weight. I don't have to worry about is the battery charged? Because I guarantee you in that environment, they may have more than one phone, and they will all always be charged.
Absolutely.
No doubt.
Yeah.
So.
That's true. Yes. Right. Yeah. I completely agree, and the point you bring up is very well taken about the mobile computing, the mobile applications, the iPhone applications, the iTouch. It would be a lot cheaper if we just bought them all an iPhone. If we could find a way of integrating that, you know, it's like that's a clicker program and do your email. I mean, if you could do Citrix on that, we'd be done the cost. But I completely agree with you on that. I think that may be a point for us to investigate as well. So. Yeah. And that's a very good point, just to pause you right there. We relied really heavily on survey data from faculty and students. And just as you say, in casting no aspersions, but many times, depending on their field, they don't know what they want. And so relying exclusively on survey data is not necessarily...
So we just put the specs on the portal. They check the specs themselves. If they're appropriate, they purchase from their budgets, and then it's their problem. And then they can figure out.
And again, that's that environment with the budgets and so forth. Our environment is different. They, the expectation is that we will purchase it.
That's a big
correct.
That's a big problem.
It's a big problem.
But it's probably very applicable to other folks in the room. That's true.
As a reminder, EDUCAUSE wants everybody or is asking everybody to fill out survey information. And we'll be here for a few minutes afterwards if there are any other questions we want to take off offline. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
This EDUCAUSE 2009 Annual Conference Podcast is sponsored by Juniper Networks and Quest Communications International. Thanks for listening.